Okay, I want you to picture a piece of steel, just a standard, heavy, gray block of metal. To the naked eye, it is probably the most boring thing in the world. It's static, it's cold, it's just there. But if we could zoom in, I mean, way, way in, down to the atomic level, that boring block of metal is, it's actually a chaotic, violent dance floor.
That is a very dramatic opening for a Tuesday.
I'm trying to set the mood because today we're diving into a document that, you know, on the surface looks incredibly dry. It's a master's thesis from 2011. It's from the Graduate Institute of Ferrous Technology at POSTECH in Korea.
Which, just for context, is a heavyweight institution. If you want to know about iron and steel, POSTECH is, well, it's one of the places you look.
Exactly. But the title of this thesis
Keep breath.
is A Study on the Application of Wang-Landau Monte Carlo Method on Carbide.
It is a mouthful.
Yeah.
And I can just hear some listeners reaching for the skip button right now.
Don't do it. Because here's the thing, and this is why I picked this. This paper isn't really about the metal. I mean, it is, but it's actually more of a detective story. It's about how we predict the future using randomness. It's about a field called computational metallurgy.
And that's the mission today.
Yeah.
We're not here to become steel manufacturers. We're here to understand the method. How do you simulate a material inside a computer to see how it behaves before you ever make it?
And specifically, how do you solve the problem of the computer getting, well, lazy?
Lazy computers. I
Yeah.
like that. We'll definitely get there.
But we have to start with the basics. The whole thesis rests on this concept of the Monte Carlo method. Now, I'm a simple person. When I hear Monte Carlo, I think casinos, James Bond.
Tuxedos losing money.
Exactly. Why is a physics lab in Korea talking about gambling?
Well, the connection is actually literal. The method was developed back in the 1940s, part of the Manhattan Project era, and they named it after the casino because the math relies entirely on chance.
On rolling the dice.
Completely. On rolling the dice. Think about the problem the author Lee Ji-young is trying to solve. You've got this crystal structure, this carbide,
Right.
and you want to know how the atoms arrange themselves at different temperatures. But the
Right.
problem is the number of possible arrangements is, well, it's effectively infinite.
You can't just check all of them.
No. I mean, if you tried to calculate every single possible position of every single atom in a chunk of steel, the universe would end before your computer finished.
It's a combinatorial explosion.
Exactly. So you have to sample. You
Yeah.
have to guess.
Okay, and the thesis has some really great diagrams for this whole sampling problem. There's one that stuck out to me immediately. It looks like a map of Africa.
Yes. This is the perfect analogy for what they call the sampling problem.
So in the image, you have this map of Africa, and let's say your goal is to find the average depth of the Nile River. The brute force way to do it is called the grid method.
Right. You imagine laying this rigid grid of dots over the whole continent, equal spacing. And to get your answer, you have to measure the depth at every single dot.
Which is ridiculous. I mean, I'm looking at the diagram, and 99% of the dots are in the Sahara Desert or in the jungle.
Or the ocean. They aren't in the river.
Right.
Exactly. You're wasting massive amounts of computing power measuring sand when you want to know about water. It's accurate, sure, because you measure everything, but it's so inefficient, it's basically useless for complex systems.
All your time is spent calculating zero depth in the desert.
So the alternative is the Monte Carlo method. And the thesis shows that little cartoon.
Of the guy by the river with the fishing pole.
That's our physicist. Instead of mapping the whole continent, he just goes to the river. He casts his line randomly into the water, a sample here, a sample there.
And if he does it enough times?
If he casts his line enough times, he gets a statistically good enough picture of the river's depth without ever setting foot in the desert.
Okay, that makes sense. Work smarter, not harder. Don't measure the sand.
Right.
But this is where the plot thickens. The thesis argues that this standard Monte Carlo method, our fishermen, has a fatal flaw, a blind spot.
It does. And this is the whole point of the paper. It comes down to something called the Boltzmann distribution.
That was the graph with the big curve that just drops off, right?
Yes. In nature and in physics, systems are inherently lazy. They want to be in a low energy state.
Like a ball rolling down a hill.
Perfect analogy. It wants to sit at the bottom of the valley. It doesn't want to hang out on the jagged peaks. It takes energy to do that.
Okay, I follow. Nature likes to be comfortable.
So if you run a standard simulation, the computer acts just like that ball. It keeps rolling into the low energy valleys. It samples the likely states over and over and over again.
So going back to the fishermen, if the fish mostly hang out in the deep, calm pools,
the fisherman just keeps casting his line into those deep, calm pools.
Ah, and because he keeps getting bites there, he starts to assume the entire river is deep and calm.
Precisely. He misses the shallow rapids or the waterfalls or the weird eddies simply because the system, you know, it rarely goes there on its own.
But if you're a metallurgist designing a jet engine, you probably really need to know about the rapids.
You absolutely do. Those rare states,
yeah,
high energy states, that's often where the critical transitions happen. If you don't map them, your model is incomplete.
You're flying blind.
You know everything about the comfortable states and nothing about the chaotic ones.
Enter the hero of the story, the Wang Landau method.
Named after Fugao Wang and David Landau. It's a relatively new algorithm from around 2001. And it was designed specifically to stop that fisherman from being so lazy.
How does it do that? I mean, how do you force a random process or roll of the dice to go where it doesn't want to go?
You punish it.
You punish it.
Effectively, yeah.
Yeah.
Imagine the fisherman has a map. Every time he casts his line in a certain spot, he marks an X. The rule of Wang Landau is, if you have visited this spot recently, you are less likely to visit it again.
Oh, I see. So if he keeps checking the deep pool, the algorithm just says, nope. Been there, go somewhere else.
Exactly. In the simulation, it artificially raises the energy of that spot. It fills in the valley. If the ball rolls to the bottom of the hill, the algorithm adds dirt to the bottom until it's not a hole anymore.
So it forces the ball to roll back up the slope.
That's the idea. It's incredibly clever.
So eventually, the ball has nowhere to go but the high peaks.
Correct. It forces the system to explore the uncomfortable high-energy states just as often as the low-energy ones. The goal is what the thesis calls a flat histogram.
Right. I saw those graphs labeled MC time versus energy, and in the beginning, the curve is all bumpy and jagged.
Because the system is stuck in the valleys. It's visiting some energy levels way, way more than others. But as the Wang Landau simulation runs, as it fills in the holes, that curve gets flatter.
And it's flatter.
And eventually,
it's a straight line.
And that straight line represents a massive achievement. It means the computer has visited the super low energy states, the medium states, and the super high energy states.
All the same number of times.
Exactly the same number of times.
It has mapped the entire river, not just the parts where the fish are.
It gives you what's called the density of states, a complete map of every possibility the material can exist in.
Okay, I'm with you on the theory. It sounds great. But I'm always a little skeptical of simulations. It's just code, right? Garbage in, garbage out.
Mm-hmm.
How do we know this actually reflects reality and isn't just a cool math trick?
That is absolutely the right question to ask. And Lee Ji-young and his advisors, Professor Badeshi and Professor Kim, they knew that. You can't just apply a new algorithm to a complex material right away. You have to validate it.
You have to test it on something where you already know the answer.
The answer key, exactly. And this brings us to figure 6 in the thesis. The 2D Ising model.
The Ising model. I feel like I hear this every time I talk to a physicist. That seems to be the go-to test. What is it exactly?
It's the hello world of statistical mechanics. It's a simplified model of ferromagnetism. So basically how magnets work.
Okay.
Imagine a checkerboard, a grid. On every square, there's an atom. And that atom can either point up or down in.
Like a magnet, north or south.
Exactly. Just a binary system. And because it's so simple, just up or down on a grid, mathematicians have actually solved it. We have an exact analytical solution. We know the truth of the Ising model down to the decimal point.
So it's the perfect test subject.
It's the perfect test subject. So the author sets up a 32 by 32 grid and a 50 by 50 grid. They run the Wang Landau algorithm on it, and then they overlay their simulation results with the exact mathematical solution.
I'm looking at figure 6 right now. You've got the solid line, which is the exact solution.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got these little symbols, which are the simulation.
And what do you see?
They're identical. I mean, they are perfectly on top of each other. Even at the peak of the curve where the line spikes up, the dots follow up perfectly.
That is the sanity check. It proves the tool is sharp. It reproduced the exact specific heat curve of the Ising model without knowing the answer beforehand. So once you have that match, you have the license to proceed. You can now take this weapon and point it at the real target.
The carbide.
The carbide.
So let's pivot to the metal. We've established the method works. Why this specific material? I mean, it's post-tech, so I assume it's all about making better steel.
Yes. In the steel industry, carbides are these tiny hard particles that form inside the metal matrix. They're kind of like the rebar in concrete.
Okay.
They determine if the steel is hard, brittle, flexible, strong.
Hmm.
And carbide is a specific structure and arrangement of iron, aluminum, and carbon.
But the thesis really emphasizes it's looking for phase transitions.
Right.
Now, when I hear phase transition, I just think ice melting into water, solid to liquid, the stuff from middle school.
And that's the classic example. Yeah. But phase transitions happen inside solids, too.
Wait, so the metal stays solid, but it transitions?
Yes. It's called a solid-state phase transition. The atoms suddenly rearrange themselves from one crystal pattern to another, or the magnetic alignment shifts.
Okay, so it's like a marching band on a football field suddenly changing formation from a square to a circle.
That's a great way to put it. No one left the field, but the phase, the order, has completely changed.
And I'm guessing that changes how the metal behaves.
Drastically. It might go from being ductile, you know, stretchy, to being brittle and shattering like glass.
Which is something you definitely want to know before you build a bridge or a skyscraper out of it.
Exactly. You need to know the temperature where that shift happens.
So how does Wang Landau spot this? The computer is just spitting out energy numbers. It doesn't have a tiny camera watching the atoms. How does it flag a phase transition?
This is the best part. It's pure data detective work. The thesis lists specific criteria. They look for discontinuities.
A glitch in the matrix.
Kind of. If you plot the internal energy of the system against temperature, it's usually a smooth line. But what's called a first-order transition, that line breaks. It jumps.
A sudden gap in energy.
Yes. The system absorbs what's called latent heat. Just like water boiling, it stays at 100 degrees Celsius while it absorbs energy to turn into steam. That energy gap tells you a transition is happening.
Okay, the text also mentions specific heat, and I have to ask about this definition. The thesis defines specific heat as the fluctuation of the energy.
Yes, this is the statistical mechanics definition.
Because high school chemistry just taught me it's how much energy it takes to heat something up.
And that's the practical outcome. But why does it take energy? In the statistical world, specific heat is mathematically related to the variance of the energy.
Okay, what does that mean in plain English?
It measures how much the energy is wobbling. Is the system steady, or is it swinging wildly between different states?
Wobbling, I can visualize that. So a low specific heat means the atoms are pretty chill.
Right, they're vibrating, but consistently. Now imagine you're at a phase transition. The system is confused. It's right on the edge of being type A structure and type B structure. It's like a coin spinning on a table. The fluctuations become massive.
And the thesis says at a first order transition, the specific heat becomes infinite.
Theoretically, yes. The spike is huge.
So that's the smoking gun.
That is the smoking gun. And this connects all the way back to why we use Wang Landau, because the method forced the simulation to visit all the energy states, even the weird, unstable ones right at that transition point. It captures that spike perfectly. A standard simulation might have missed it or smoothed it out because it involved high energy states the lazy algorithm would just ignore.
So Lee, Ji Young, runs the code, looks at the graph, sees the specific heat spike to infinity, and points to that temperature and says, there, that's where the steel changes.
Precisely. They identified the critical temperature for the order-disorder transition in carbide, and they did it without melting a single gram of iron.
Just by manipulating probability.
That's it.
You know, it seems incredibly efficient, but I do want to push back on one thing. The thesis mentions using a 10 by 10 by 10 grid for the carbide simulation. That feels small.
It is small.
A piece of steel has trillions of atoms. Is a block of 1,000 atoms really enough to tell us how a bridge behaves?
That's a classic constraint of computational metallurgy.
Mm.
You're always limited by computing power. And Wang Landau is computationally expensive because you have to visit every state.
It takes a long time to get that flat histogram.
A very long time. So they have to compromise on size. But there are tricks like something called periodic boundary conditions.
Well, what's that?
The computer pretends that little block repeats infinitely in all directions. So if an atom walks off the right side of the screen, it just reappears on the left.
Oh, clever.
It simulates an infinite bulk material using a small sample. It's not perfect, but as we saw with the Ising model, it's surprisingly accurate at capturing the fundamental physics.
So the behavior is there.
The existence of the transition is captured.
Mm.
It's really a triumph of logic over brute force.
You know, as we wrap this up, I'm stuck on this idea of the Boltzmann distribution versus Wang Landau, it feels like there's a life lesson buried in here.
How so?
Well, we established that nature is lazy. Systems want to stay in the low-energy valleys. Mm-hmm. They do what is likely, what is comfortable.
And we certainly do that as humans. We stick to our routines, eat at the same places, talk to the same people.
We live in a Boltzmann distribution. We sample the most likely events over and over. We optimize for low energy.
It's efficient. Saves brain power. But as we learned today, it's an incomplete picture.
Exactly. If you only live in the Boltzmann distribution, you never see the density of states. You never see the full map of what's possible in your own life.
And you might miss the phase transitions.
That's the key. The big changes, the reinventing of yourself, the infinite specific heat moments, they usually happen in the high energy states, the places you don't naturally go.
The uncomfortable places.
Right.
So you're saying we need to apply the Wang Landau algorithm to our weekends.
I am. We need to penalize the places we've already been. Oh, you sat on the couch last night. Penalty. You have to go somewhere else tonight.
Fill in the valley, so yeah. You're forced to climb the hill.
It's the only way to get a flat histogram of life, my friend. You have to force the exploration.
That is a surprisingly deep takeaway from a master's thesis on iron aluminum carbon alloys.
I try my best, but seriously, it's fascinating work by Lee Ji Young. It shows that sometimes, to understand the reality of a system, you have to force it to do the unnatural thing.
Yeah, you have to look at the unlikely to understand the whole. Well said.
Thanks for diving into the atomic dance floor with us today.
Always a pleasure.
And to our listener, check your own parameters. Are you stuck in a low-energy valley? Maybe it's time to run a little Wang Landau code on your own life and see what high-energy states you've been missing. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.